This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki in New Plymouth, thanks to New Zealand On Air. For more local content, search for accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. Our past can be identified through whakapapa, ancestry, heritage, and history. On this show, we highlight the tangible parts of the past, or those that we can see and touch. I'm Suzanne Rawson, a cultural materials conservator, and I invite you to join me in a journey of uncovering the stories of the special things in our communities. Nau mai, hari mai, and welcome to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. My name is Suzanne, and I'm your host, and thank you so much for listening in. In today's episode, I'm interviewing Dennis Fever. He's the director of Fever Museum Services. So I met Dennis through his work creating mounts for Pukiriki and Lenlai Center, and it's been really fun to collaborate on projects. I interviewed Den in between mount-making jobs, so the following audio are excerpts from that interview. Listen in as I jumped right in by asking Den about the name of his business.
Tell me the name of your business, because your business card has such a diverse range of activities on it.
Yeah, that's right. I decided to call it FMS because... The M in FMS could mean many different things, you know, like mount making, museum work, metal work, all of that sort of stuff. So it kind of covered a range of things. So Fever Museum Services.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Pretty much.
Covers everything you do.
Kind of does. In a way, it is a bit weird because I did do some research into the actual name, you know, as you do when you're trying to start something up. Mm. And it all came back clear, but I subsequently found another business in Wellington called FMS.
Well, that's very inconvenient.
Isn't it just? Yeah. So I have been toying with the idea of, before I get too much further along, of possibly changing the name to Opua.
Mm. What does that mean?
Well, that in Māori, that means like wellspring.
Huh.
I think that sort of speaks to a lot of what we do in the industry, where it's just sort of like, is the start of something new for maybe some of those heritage items, stuff like that.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it also has a personal sort of... It relates to me personally as well, because I was born in Opanaki, and outside of Opanaki there's a road called Opua Road, and that's where I started.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's two meanings for you.
That's amazing. That's right. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So that's really nice.
So if you had to describe to people what you do, what is Fever Museum Services?
I offer a range of services in the museum, not limited to things like design assistance and layout concept development. Not so much storylines, but definitely the big picture. But more from a practical point of view, I'm a maker, I suppose, in the bigger sense of it all, and that ranges right through from, well, a whole lot of multimedia sort of materials, which includes mount making.
Another M word, a maker. I like that.
Yeah. So like things like mount making, kind of metalwork based.
Oh, yes.
But I do also make furniture for exhibitions as well.
Right. You know? So people might ask, like, why does a museum need somebody to help them make a mount, or what is a mount even? What, if you had to describe kind of why these services are necessary to museums?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I was talking yesterday with someone, and they had somebody who had commented to them about what I was doing and how it looks to be quite simple. And you know how, but what I'm saying is that when you're stepping back and you're watching somebody make a mount, it does look quite simple, but there's actually quite a bit of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, and it's all about it's all about having the right attitude and knowing the right protocols in place and being sort of steeped in that institutional
like awareness of,
yeah, that's right, about what you should and shouldn't do, and
as far as handling the object
as,
or mounting,
as far as handling the object goes, as, and making the mount and using the right materials, making sure that like especially for heritage items like especially tonga, treating everything with a bit of respect and making sure that you've spoken with the family, the iwi or whatever, about orientation. And because, I mean, you know, like for instance, like for many years, if you were asked to, or if I was asked to make a mount for a taiha and put that on display, invariably the default approach would be to display it at an angle or vertically, point up, because it meant that that was in a passive situation and not in attack mode. But you know, over the years the attitudes have changed now, and according to a few of the collection managers that I've spoken to for the Māori departments who are looking after Tonga collections, have now come to the conclusion that whenever something like a taiha or a patu is put on display, it's always inactive. It's only ever active if a human being's holding it. So, which means it opens up the scope to displaying those items any way you like, and you can explain it away in that case. So if you were, if a designer wanted to display a taiha blade up, then that's totally okay. Nowadays, yeah, anyway, in a lot of places, not everywhere, you still have to ask that question and what the preferences are.
There are so many considerations.
Yeah, that's right. And things like the po that we worked on at Pukeariki, you know, clasping it around the neck and stuff like that, it's all a bit of a no-no, you know, so kind of makes the job a little bit harder. Whereas if you didn't have that background or, you know, that knowledge, I suppose, of working in the system for a long time, you might just go ahead and do whatever you like.
Yeah, right.
Den chose our first song by artist Nick Rada, and he did a remix of Bjork's Mutual Core. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Preserving Our Past on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. In the last segment, I introduced Dennis Fever from Fever Museum Services, and Den gave us an interview on what mount makers consider when they display artworks or objects. He described how attitudes have changed and how we display cultural materials. And in this segment, I really wanted to share more of our interview and his connection to Taranaki.
And tell me more about Opunaki. It's so great that you have a local connection, even though you're currently based
in Wellington.
In Wellington, Upper Hutt, is it?
In Upper Hutt, yeah. That's right.
But you've got a connection to Taranaki, which I think is what the greatest thing about this radio show. It really highlights how all the ways we weave back to where we come
sure.
from.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I have a deep connection with... especially that area in between Opunaki and Raihutu, that every time I go there, it's just like, man, I want to, you know, I need a bit of land out here, you know. Or, you know, I just feel every time I come here that I'm coming home.
Wow, what an incredible
thing. And it's amazing because I've been away for 40 years.
Right. How did your upbringing in Opunaki influence what you do? Would you describe yourself as a creative?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah, no question. Yeah.
How did you get into this line of work? You were telling me a little bit about the Fever family history.
Yeah, well, that really has, I suppose, always been exposed to thinking outside the box with my father. And he's just an incredible fellow. Who is a bit of a Kiwi inventor.
Nice.
And is still a Kiwi inventor overseas. He left the country in 1976.
Wow.
And has been out of the country ever since. Just been picked up by the Americans, basically, and used in the oil industry as a,
wow.
as a, you know, a dude who can solve problems. All of... I shouldn't say all, because my mother's side of the family are also, you know, they have some creative sort of bents as well. But I think more leading towards the Fever side of things, you know, steeping right back from the great-great-grandfather all the way down the line to myself and the rest of us. We all seem to... like the odd.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, well, I can't really explain it, really.
Yeah.
And
thinking outside the box.
Yeah, we all sort of have the ability to invent, you know, like the little Pope or the puppet and stuff like that, where you don't really know, you know, we had the viewing a little while ago, and it takes that long, really, to sort of, like, process it.
To process it. So you're referring to a project that we're working on together, which is why I'm interviewing you today, of a very unique cultural item, puppet, and you're creating the mount for it, which is super exciting. But it is an unusual one in that we've had to work together to kind of figure out the best way to support him, because he's a textile body, isn't he? And we don't like to put pressure on anywhere. But the outcome's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's what mount making's all about as well, and that's working with the right people, and especially conservators, you know, because it's true, because, you know, everyone needs to be happy with, especially when an object like that is in, you know, your care. And I'm not a conservator, I'm a mount maker.
Yes.
So you need to have those conversations.
I think that's
about what's
very
best.
Generous of you. We certainly have a different philosophy or kaupapa in our studio, that we aren't experts in this. We're co-creators in this knowledge, and we're both bringing something to the table about how best to care for this material and cultural item. But are there a lot of people that do your type of work?
I think from just having a chat the other week with another mount maker, I think there's about 7 of us in the country.
Oh my gosh.
So it's pretty limited. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a great guy, John Patterson, who operates in the South Island. Great, good mount maker. There's two independents in Wellington. And then you've course, we've got Te Papa, who has a mountmaking crew to make those. And I think there's two at Te Papa.
Oh, right. So that includes people who are employed at institutions as well as private.
I'd say so. Huh. You know, I mean, you've got Missy, who does a bit of mountmaking at Pukeariki.
Oh, wow. It's a pleasure to get to work with mountmakers because you really make the objects come alive. So let's talk about that for a second, Dan. When you mount an object, it totally changes the way you interpret it. That's my external perspective.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you see what you do as a form of bringing life to an object or
absolutely
as a form of preservation?
No, every time. Every time it's about making the object sit in its designated spot in the best possible light, really, in relation to everything else that's going on around it, you know,
so
as well as sort of pleasing everyone else who's trying to look at it. So,
and that's where that creativity and design comes in.
Yeah, that's right.
You've got a lot of other elements around it, colours and textures.
For sure, absolutely. Wow. The aesthetic behind, you know, what... I mean, a mount can be anything, really. A mount can be a block of wood with a bit of fabric on it as a lift.
Huh.
And a few pins just popped into the top of it to stop things from rocking around in an earthquake, you know. Or it can be a bit more complicated, like the little puppet mount, where, you know, we've profiled its feet at the different angles so we're not putting any pressure on the joints and stuff like that. But I put my hand up for being a pretty good layout guy for exhibitions. So I think I've got a pretty good eye. And I really learnt, that's just a learnt thing over years, really. Mm. As well as having a bit of just inherent ability to know what looks good.
I think that's a big part of it. For me, it's not natural to pick and choose color schemes that match well, and that's all part of that aesthetic.
Well, I'm not much of a color guy, but I'm a placement person.
Placement guy. That's beautiful. What an incredible science.
I think, and you know, and it can make a real difference. You know, about, like, for instance, when we make a base plate for this puppet today, we'll place the mount. Maybe not in the centre, but just fractionally off-centred towards the back, so that when you're standing there, you probably won't know, but subconsciously you'll know that it gives you a bit more perspective.
You're really showcasing the item itself.
That's right, and it can only take a few mil or a centimetre or two to make a huge difference.
That.
Yeah, that's right.
Gosh, you truly are an artist.
Our second song was also chosen by Den. It's by the artist Monkey Safari, featuring Delia de France, and the title of the song is Gravity. Welcome back to the last segment of Preserving Our Past on today's episode, featured on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. And if you'd listened to the show from the start, you heard that for this episode, we're with Den Fever from Fever Museum Services. We'll spend the last segment of the show hearing about some of his wonderful experiences. Listen in.
I have to ask you, of course, what is the most interesting object you've worked with? What's the most memorable thing you've
done? I have been thinking over the last few days about about that question because I thought it might come up.
Yeah.
And, man, really, it's just so hard, you know.
Wow.
I suppose, well, there are many, you know.
Mm.
I suppose maybe the one that has affected me the deepest would be the Pātika panels.
Oh, my gosh.
That were found at Motunui and put back on display. So,
did you do the mounts for this?
Yeah, well, I made that little 3D sort of a framework and then mounted those in place.
So if you could describe what that looks like, they're wooden panels that would have been used on a food store of some sort, the Pātika, and then they've been mounted so that they project kind of out from a center.
Yeah, so the framework is in the shape of a Pātika, and the panels are put into place where they may have been in reality. So you can see the outline of the Pātika, and maybe one day we'll find some more panels to go on there.
So do you have a connection to Motunui as well? Is that what made it personal, or was it another aspect?
No, I think just the Taranaki thing really coming through. And I'm really fascinated by the style of carving that comes out of Taranaki as well, because it's really deep, like deeply carved. And you don't seem to find that anywhere else, really. It's just, you know, really heavily carved.
Intentional.
Yeah, that's right.
We're very lucky, the types of cultural materials we have in Taranaki, the types of artworks.
For sure.
The collections that people have just in their own spaces, personally, as well as our major organizations.
So that's probably the thing that's affected me the most, working on that.
Oh, wow.
Which was just like such an honour. But as far as other interesting things goes, would be putting a 737 cockpit on display outside the front of Te Papa.
Oh my gosh.
It's probably the biggest thing I've done. And that was a bit of a mission. Yeah.
Wow.
On top of, the rest of the exhibition. That was for the 75th anniversary of Air New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, which went on tour, actually. So we shipped that around the country and put it up.
The cockpit you shipped it around
the cockpit, I think, only went, I can't remember whether or not it went to Auckland, but it definitely went to Christchurch.
Oh, wow. Some listeners might remember that exhibition.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
That there, and then taking and putting on display a big boulder for the New Zealand Pavilion at the Dubai World Expo.
Tell me more about that.
So the theme for the New Zealand Pavilion at the World Expo in Dubai was based around water and preserving our environment.
Oh, wow.
I think. So it was all about the Whanganui River and how it is its own entity now, and it's like the first in the world to have its own rights, just like a human, and you know, really showcasing that concept to the rest of the world, because now there are, I think there's two in Africa or Egypt somewhere that are going through that process of, you know, because there's so many stakeholders in those rivers, especially overseas, you know.
And so you had a boulder?
The boulder, instead of like for exhibitions overseas, normally you would have like a Modi stone, which is Pranami, which visitors can sort of touch and get some mana, or put some mana into it. But because this exhibition was about the Whanganui River, we went and had chosen for us a boulder off Ruapehu, which is the, the headwaters of Whanganui. And that was a 3.5 ton, you know, andesitic boulder that I was asked to have a think about and suspend over a pool of water when it was on display in Dubai with no machinery involved. So
how does that work?
Yeah, well, that's right. How does that work when you're sitting around the table? That's right.
So what
I ended up doing was designing and having made a big trolley, basically, an open trolley, a little bit like you see on the port where you have a long-legged crane that picks up a container.
Yes.
Yeah, so basically just made one of those things to pick the boulder up.
Right.
So you could wheel it around and then drop it into place so that so the trolley was wide enough to span the pool of water that we produced for the show, and then drop that into place on a small mount.
Wow.
So that when the lights were sort of in the right, you know, once they'd been focused, then it just looked like the boulder suspended above a pool of water with big waterfalls either side of it, 10-meter stud, big sound system. Oh, it was incredible. Yeah.
This sounds like a career highlight. This is or a career challenge.
one of them, yeah.
Wow, that's,
one of them for
that's
sure.
Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like one of thousands of things that have come across the plate.
Well, how lucky you are, and how lucky we are to get.
I feel real lucky.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I every now and again I'll get asked what I do, and it's just like, oh.
How do you package it up?
Yeah, you know, it ends up being this long diatribe.
Yes.
Monologue.
Of different experiences.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why we get good work excited every day. We just never know what we're going to work with.
And, exactly.
There seems to be a common theme of people and art and what you do and the way people think. But thank you so much for being a part of the show and for letting me ask you some questions about your very fascinating career.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
I think that's all the questions I had. I could talk to you for hours. That was phenomenal. Thank you so much.
That's our show for this week. Ngā mihi nui, listeners, and thank you so much to our sponsor, HPFS Solutions, for making these stories possible. Please join me next week when we begin a whole new story. To listen to past episodes, visit our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki in New Plymouth, thanks to New Zealand On Air. For more local content, search for accessradiotaranaki.com.